just 2 years ago at a conference in Lausanne, Switzerland, my own country, the Dalai Lama gave a conference. And at the end of this conference, there were questions that one could ask. And one person asked, "What is Buddhism?" And I thought, oh, this is interesting. What is he going to reply to such a huge question? And he said, it's very simple. Buddhism is a mental training that eliminates the unwholesome states of the mind that cause pain. And he defined liberation as the complete eradication of these mental states, which we often speak of as being greed, hatred, and delusion. And he spoke from a very deep place of full confidence that this is possible, to eradicate these mental states. And so here, today, yesterday, and during the days that we're going to be spending together, we are making physical and mental efforts in the service of awakening, in the service of liberation. And it happens through a process of transformation, purifying the mind and heart. And we can find that along the way, whether on retreat or in our lives, we at times can taste the fruits of this purification process, which hopefully makes us further walk on the path. So with the establishment of mindfulness through this direct experience in our practice every moment, we come to know that certain states of mind increase and others decrease. That's the natural process of a law. And as we have experienced meditators in this room, we begin to find, and I'm sure all of us begin to find, that at least to some degree, we've let go of what is unwholesome, to some degree. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. Let go of what brings about suffering, what is harmful to ourselves, and naturally what also is harmful to other beings. So, how can this be known? If there's already a little bit of the unwholesome mind states that are not present, where for myself I can really sense that there's a simplification in my life. And I think for many of us, we will say that the way that we can see this happen is that we simplify our lives. We make it just less complicated. When there is trouble, it doesn't mean there's no trouble, but we make it less complicated when there's trouble, and we find the means to be able to do that. And that is already enormous. We find that, therefore, the wholesome states of mind, of mindfulness, of steadiness of mind, concentration, equanimity, generosity, compassion, loving kindness, all these wholesome states of mind are a little more what we experience. They're more readily available for us. And therefore, they bring about a sense of trust or confidence in the teachings. There's a trust that comes from the simple feeling of greater connection to ourselves. Trust in our own capacity to realize the teaching. And that is what makes us walk the path even a little further. So it's no small deal. And this happens in the immediacy of the here and now. And in relationship also, of course, to our deepest goal. Whatever the goal is for you. To touch and have the trust that sense of inspiration can manifest through the practice. In being confident, we are simply taking a deeper root. we have a root from which we stand, which is a little more embedded. And actually, the Dalai Lama was not inventing anything. He was really referring to the Buddha's teachings, which you will be listening to, and I'm quoting here the Buddha. He says, abandon what is unwholesome, O bhikkhus, or practitioners. So we are here. If it were not possible, I would not ask you to do so. If this abandoning of the unwholesome would bring harm and suffering, I would not ask you to abandon it. But as the abandoning of the unwholesome brings benefit and happiness, therefore I say, abandon what is unwholesome. He also says, cultivate what is wholesome, O practitioners. One can cultivate what is wholesome. If it were not feasible, I would not ask you to do it. If the cultivation of the wholesome would bring harm and suffering, I would not ask you to cultivate it. As the cultivation of the wholesome brings benefits and happiness, therefore I say, cultivate the wholesome. This way of seeing just the truth of what brings suffering and what leads to greater happiness, ease, peace in our own minds, and of course, in relationship to what is happening outside, can be a great source of inspiration for our practice, inspiring feelings of self-confidence, especially if there is a sense of doubt or feeling that we're unable, we don't have the capacity. The sense that, in fact, it can be done. Over the many years of my practice, there have been times when I felt various difficulties within myself, no doubt. In the same way that you're feeling difficulties, certain moments here, probably, and also in relationship to the practice, and when I've been truly honest about this with myself, I saw that most of the time it was because I was worried and fearful of not being capable of actualizing the teaching and the practice. And so it's so important to have this in mind, that it's possible. There's a real sense of possibility, of potential, of being able this can be done. This truly can be done. The realization and the actualization of eradicating these unwholesome mind states to a certain extent. And again, if we had not had some direct experience of greater ease, greater freedom, we would not be sitting in this room. And when I've felt some sense of confidence, the appreciation for the practice grows in the same way that it can grow within yourself. And there is not only an appreciation, but a true love for the authenticity and the truth of our own meeting with what is. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Pandita, that Joseph spoke of last night, which had a really quite a demanding attitude towards his students, and no doubt it was challenging to practice with him, but I would always tune in to the prospect of his approach to the practice, telling us over and over again that we needed to have the attitude that we can do it. And he was totally confident when, in the presence of his students, he would say, it's possible. You can meet the difficulties. You can really be with whatever it is that is difficult for you and be successful in your relationship. And he always would end, "I say so because the Buddha said so." And it is the truth. And you find that in the suttas. So, however, until we're fully awake, as you know, there will be moments of ease and there will be moments when we meet challenging experiences, sometimes extremely challenging. And actually, it cannot be otherwise. And I think we drop from the sense of idealizing what it could look like to coming to a sense of reality. And sometimes it's a hard drop to be just with what is. This path of purification requires the spiritual quality of patience. Patience in the beginning, patience in the middle of the path. And that is what I would like to talk about tonight. Patience in the teaching is called a virtue. Now, perhaps it would be interesting to notice what pops up in your mind when you hear the word patience. Doesn't it sound a little bit out of date? It really is not an attitude, right, that is in fashion these days. And a teacher said, it's because we're so impatient that we don't understand what patience is all about. And definitely it's not worshipped in the Western culture. And may I dare include Israel in the Western culture for this? No? No, you belong to the East. Although it's spreading. You know, I was in India and Thailand not long ago, and unfortunately the sense of impatience is spreading all over. So it's not only in the West that it's happening. So we have become an impatient society. We rush so much in our lives. And I think that if we question and hear, it's really a good space to have a sense of, why am I rushing so much in my life? What for? What's the point? You know, and of course, if we're on a spiritual path, these kind of questions come about. They're meaningful. We're exploring here how we can pause and notice what is happening in our own minds. There's a wonderful story about finding patience. This lady wrote to me, and it's a student, and she said, just for the fun, yesterday I was rushing to prepare the dinner ready to make it ready after my son's baseball game, during which I had to leave to pick up my husband from work since we're down to one car only to come home and rush everyone to bed in order to meet a work deadline that I didn't finish in the office. When I asked my four-year-old son, Miguel, for the 17th time, where is your other shoe? He looks at me and screams back, I don't know, you had it last. It was 5:25 and my oldest son was supposed to be at the field at 5:30. We live 15 minutes away, so you can just imagine the impatience in myself. I couldn't find Miguel's shoe, and to top it off, a fight broke out between my oldest, who's 8, and his sister, 5. Something about a piece of paper. Anyway, I screamed, all of you, go to your rooms until I find Miguel's other shoe. I've completely lost my patience with all of you. Miguel looks at me and says, don't worry, Mommy. After you help me find my shoe, we'll help you find your patience. She said, at that point, I inhaled one of those deep, focus on your breath type of breaths and gave me a big hug, because all was good after that. So this is just normal, what's happening in our lives, that we're rushing and we don't really know why, and then we can pause and find our breath. And it's just so wonderful to be able to have the practice to focus on the breath when this is happening. You know, in this society, we're asked to be so efficient. I have a dear friend, and the business that she's working for is going through kind of some financial difficulty. And this friend likes to do things well. She's even maybe a bit on the side of being a perfectionist. And just the other day, this is not long ago, just a week ago, she was asked by her boss to be more sloppy, careless, in order to be more efficient in her work. So in many ways, this is happening. This behavior feeds the underlying force of impatience and restlessness. And it's amazing how the tendency is so strong. So now, this attitude may also color the way we relate to our practice, no doubt. If there's this tendency in our lives, we are the same human beings coming on retreat. If everything has to be done fast, here the results have to come fast too. Or else, we lose interest pretty quickly. And so notice if this is happening moments on retreat for you, then it's important to cultivate this extraordinary spiritual quality, which is a virtue of patience. Here are a few words about the process of Ajahn Sumedho, the Thai Forest Monastery abbot, and he's an American. He retired now, but here are his words. He said, when I first went to Wat Phapong, which was the monastery where he learned the meditation, actually, and this is probably the beginning of his meditation training, I couldn't understand Lao. And in those days, my teacher, Ajahn Chah, was at his peak and giving 3-hour talks every evening. He could go on and on and on, and everybody loved him. He was a very good speaker, very humorous, and everybody enjoyed his talks. But if you couldn't understand Lao like me, I'd be sitting there thinking, when is he going to stop? I'm wasting my time here. And I would really get angry, thinking, I've had enough, I'm leaving, I'm going somewhere else. But I couldn't get enough nerve to leave. So I would just sit there thinking, I'll go to another monastery, I've had enough of this. Thoughts of impatience. I'm not going to put up with this. And then he would look at me, he had the most radiant smile, and he'd say, are you all right, Sumedho? And suddenly all the anger that had been accumulating those 3 hours would completely drop away. That's interesting, he says, isn't it? After sitting there fuming for 3 hours, it can just go in a moment. So I vowed that my practice would be patience, and that during this time I would develop this very clear, beautiful quality of the mind. I'd sit and sit and sit again as long as I could physically stand it. I determined not to miss them or try to get out of them and just practice patience. And by doing that, I began to find that the opportunity to be patient was something that has helped me very much. Patience is a very firm foundation for my insight and understanding of the Dhamma. Without that, I would have just wandered and drifted about. So you can notice in this clear explanation of his own process, starting with a lot of impatience, and of course, impatience has the root of anger and aversion, there's no doubt a possibility of a process, working with it, meeting it. And one can find that in the midst of a difficult situation, we think that we're learning nothing. That's exactly what we may think here. I'm learning nothing. Going away. And in his very meeting with just staying with it, being steady and constant, he was learning something. And so when we think that we're learning nothing, it is usually patience that is being learned. And it's so wonderful, because this is a clear attitude of mind when we learn to face the difficulties in a different way. It has a quality of forbearance, of tolerance. We may hear the word tolerance or forbearance and then think patient means to hold unpleasant experience with a kind of resistance, right? And this is where we begin usually, right? Gritting our teeth, clenching our fist, or holding back our breath, putting pressure, right? Which has just one result. It reinforces the tension and the restlessness and brings about more impatience. So it's normal that this happens. It's completely part of the meeting. So if this is what happened today, please know that it's good practice. It has to be this way. Now, how do we have the possibility or the potential to have this quality of patience grow in our practice and, of course, then in our lives? I think that, of course, life is a lesson in patience. And I think it's really one of the places where we can learn about patience. We learn patience because it's a very supportive environment to learn any of these wholesome states of mind. So we learn patience by meeting our impatience. It's kind of the fiber, the texture, right, that we work with. And we can acknowledge impatience to know what patience is about, exactly in the way that Ajahn Sumedho was describing. What is impatience? It's usually a resistance to what is present. There's a form of grasping or a form of aversion, a sense of leaning towards or away from. And definitely a sense of imbalance of energy. At times it can be felt mentally, a lot of thoughts, and this sense of impatience can be really bringing up a lot of restlessness. And it can be very physical, noticed best in the body. And since we've been working with a lot of body awareness, right? This is a body. We can notice that the impatience may come through this sense of contact with the physical body. And relax and open to that experience. So the way that we will be allowing this to be met is, of course, with mindfulness. It's very different to relax and open to that resistance rather than staying caught in the net of the struggle or avoiding, which are the two ways that we tend to apply when there's resistance. Avoidance on one side, we don't want to be with the experience, or we're caught in it. So being mindful is really neither one of them. We learn to stay present rather than trying to force a situation to meet our personal agenda, what I want or don't want. And we look at it in a very direct experience, in the same way that we look at body sensations. Rather than stay very fixated on imagining how it would be like if we didn't have this impatience, which is, of course, the tendency, right? Now, for myself, when impatient, this is a very unique experience where I'm noticing that I'm objectifying other people as a source of discomfort. It's fascinating to notice that the anger and the aversion and the restlessness is because of this person, this person, this person, right? So we project, vent the anger outwardly. And this is very common, right? A yogi in front of us in the food line, and we feel so irritated by them. And it has nothing to do about them. It's my own irritation and how I feel. They are the cause of my pain. Well, notice what's happening. It's not them that's the problem. It's maybe the sense of not noticing that there is some irritation, frustration in ourselves. And so we're just impatient at the outer situation. And so tuning in to what is happening internally and allowing ourselves to notice more closely, being in contact, in touch with what is happening, or a person walking slowly in front of us. Any type of irritation with another person, whether in the hall, whether outside, in the lunch line, and there's so many opportunities, right? There's so many things. Ooh, a person makes me really be impatient, irritates me. You can know that that means that there is resistance within you. That's a very good sign. What it is that there's resistance in the form of aversion. And no doubt that in this silent environment, what you know to be called, right, the hindrances, desire, aversion, restlessness, sloth and torpor, we know them well, right? These are going to manifest. And even if we're an experienced yogi, these are the unwholesome mind states that the Buddha talked about. So there's no doubt that they will happen. So it's, how do we meet them? Is there mindfulness and patience? If there is, then we can relinquish our resistance. And we do this over and over and over again. Unfortunately, it's not just done once and then we're over with. This is the practice. And I've learned so much about patience in this way, as probably many of you have in relationship to allowing. So the pathway to acceptance is this meeting with the resistance and opening to it. Exactly what was said last night by Joseph in relationship to the fear. It's not enough to recognize. It's how am I recognizing and what is the resistance about within myself. One of the ways that I feel is the most accessible in relationship to learning about this specific quality is in the walking. The walking meditation is very precious. Because in the walking, it's so easy to have the tendency to feel rushed, to be in the next step rather than fully living this one step, fully be present. And it takes patience to hold that aspiration to be one step, in one step, and fully living, witnessing the ability to rest completely in that step, enabling then the moment of presence and allowing that to feel. So that invitation to slow down that Joseph gave the first night, if you remember, it's not too long ago, is an incredibly helpful advice, actually, in relationship to cultivating patience. Because there's a natural interest, and it can only come from a natural interest, to inhabit and live from the now space, settling back. This phrase of his, which is settling back, rather than this tendency of grasping, which is also manifesting physically, of leaning forward, counteracts this impulse. And it's a reflex. So there's definitely here a sense of commitment and kind of engagement. So patience is not kind of a resignation or a numb passivity. It's engaged. There's activity in there. But from a place of interest, we learn to relax and appreciate the ease and rest that can arise through this quality of patience. So we strengthen patience in relationship to activity. And I think that here, body activity, as you're moving from your cushion to stepping outside, and of course, you know, taking account, as was said, in relationship to the context, good moments, you choose not to go at snail pace, but other moments you can really sense how this body activity can be a place where you learn about coming into the moment, being fully present. We strengthen patience in relationship to activity here. Then it can be available for the bigger issues of our life. Right? There's no doubt that if there's a sickness or a loss of a loved one, the quality of patience is going to be needed. So there's small ways in which we learn about this quality, and then it flows out. And it includes noticing and being present to include the frustration and the irritation that comes along. This will be present, as I said, the impatience. Another aspect is to notice the thoughts. It's so helpful to notice what kind of thoughts are present when there is this sense of impatience. They often come with a lot of deep conditioning, you know? Oh, this is a waste of time. There's so much of the time where we have this sense it's a waste of time, or wanting things to be other than what they are, or I can't do it. And we become impatient. So notice the thoughts in relationship when frustration is growing. So there's noticing the resistance, being clearly present and noticing if impatience is here. It's part of the meeting, opening to the sense of physical body activity and noticing that we can relax and open energetically. So much of it can be physical energy. There's noticing the thoughts that are manifesting in relationship to impatience. Another help is to notice if we're cultivating an attitude of waiting for, which definitely is something that is present in relationship to impatience and making us lean forward. Waiting can have a drive of expectation, right? As you know well, coming from grasping. So that waiting for anything to end, waiting for a result, projects ourselves outside of the present moment, outside of that situation. And it's very different than the very simple waiting, which comes from a quality of presence. And when we have had some practice, we can really notice the difference. They're subtle. If there's waiting for, then notice if there's underneath this underlying force of wanting something, grasping. This is where we can see the conditioning. And there's kind of the waiting where we may be standing in line for lunch and we're just waiting. And there isn't at all the sense of irritation, frustration, leaning, rushing, restlessness. So here's a story which really exemplifies once again the different tones and noticing that it's a process. It's called A New Set of Eyes by Paola Darcy. She says, I was standing in the central square of a pueblo in Taos, New Mexico, waiting for the Native American ceremonial dance to begin. Even though I had driven a long way to experience this ritual, my mind was filled with impatient thoughts. When will the dancers arrive? How much longer do I have to wait? I moved restlessly around the square, observing other visitors. We all took turns glancing at watches and searching the horizon for signs of movement. I tried to stand still in one place and instead shifted from one foot to another, wanting things to happen. Nothing. An hour passed. 2 hours passed. See, this is another culture, right? She said, I had the time to memorize the shape and texture of the stones at my feet and notice the exact way the last rain had pushed small dunes of sand against a nearby log. She said, all the time thoughts were running in my head about where I could be to be more efficient and that I had arrived much too early. I tried hard not to sigh and stayed polite. I think it was a crow that suddenly flew past, causing me to look up. His flight broke my mind's litany of the time I was wasting. For the first time, I really noticed the buildings surrounding the square. Standing on the flat roofs of every home were Native women and small children, each wrapped in colorful blankets and shawls. They too awaited for the ceremony to begin. But it was the quality of their waiting that seized my attention. There was no restlessness, even in the children. They stood from a place within. I could see it. They emanated a quiet that said without words, something is about to happen. To experience it fully, you must be present. You must be joined to it with your breath and being. Then you will no longer be an observer. You too will dance, even though you stand still. You are the dance. My eyes lingered on their faces, their stillness. Watching them, I slowed my own breathing. The anxious words in my head gave way to words from a very deep place within myself. Words spoken without a sound, I let myself be led by a different kind of knowing. I brushed dirt from my jeans, and now I too was standing within my own space. Something holds all life in being. The thought was as distinct as the sunlight streaming down. The dance is not an event, it said. It is your life, your own life that matters. Like the woman, I turned and faced east, observing the power of a simple day. I barely noticed when the drumming started. It really no longer mattered. For me, the ceremony had already begun. It's just so wonderful when there's this inspiring force within us at times, and we all have had these moments where we can drop to that place of being. And this is what we've been encouraged to do, that fullness of being where there's a freshness and interest, and no doubt there can be a place of presence. And waiting can be there. There was an event that was going to be happening, and yet the event had not started, but this being could be completely present. This is the beautiful quality of patience that nourishes this presence. So feeling, sensing the body helps us be more fully alive, more fully present. And with practice, we develop this sense of honesty, which helps to be with the entire process of causes and conditions. This is an authentic process of learning to be with things the way that they are. And it's said that the proximate cause of patience is seeing things just as they are. That is the proximate cause. With patience, we carry an ability for the heart and mind to go through the ups and downs, the turbulences of life, which we all have. And there's less the tendency to either drown in them or avoid them. Less resistance. Until the eradication of the mental states where there's no resistance at all. And moments of no resistance we can also taste. And this is the confidence that is gained. And there's no doubt that the trust that we're having comes from that place of presence, openness, acceptance, and non-identification. So patience holds us present with the suffering in a very spacious way. And it's kind of an encouragement from patience. The mind can open. How does it open? It just simply receives what is. An open mind both feels more peaceful in itself, and it can more readily see into the cause of its suffering. So when there's true patience, we give up any kind of deadline. It's not about a result. The mind is a little more serene and tranquil, and therefore we are a little more able to calm the formations, which we've been invited to. Along the way, many times it will still feel very pushy or defensive. And again, this is normal. It's totally normal that this happens. It is a process. And how do we know when it feels pushy and defensive? We just say, I'm going to hold on. Hold on to this breath. And eventually, things will get better. Right? There's hope and expectation. I'll get my own way in the end if I'm patient enough. And so that's the strategy, isn't it? So there's subtle ways that this resistance manifests. And if, you know, there's an ongoing interest and curiosity, it's very interesting to notice the little thoughts where we're with it and yet not completely honest, right? In order to get. In the end, if I'm patient enough, then of course it's going to go my way. Now this approach can temporarily suspend the edge of suffering, right? But it doesn't deal with the resistance. And that's exactly what Joseph was talking about last night. It doesn't deal with the resistance or the desire that is the root of suffering. So we need to include the relationship, right? When we say, eventually things will get better, there's still a very subtle desire or energy that is wanting something else. So true patience is the kind of acceptance that acknowledges the presence of something without adding anything to it or covering it up. And it is supported by mindfulness. And naturally, the insight is that the mind stops strategizing with all the forms of attachment and aversion. The way that we strategize, manipulate our practice just ends. And this is the end of suffering. So reactivity isn't the truth of the mind, it's a conditioned reflex. It's really a conditioned reflex. And this is why, because of that, suffering can be undone. And every time there isn't the sense of reactivity, the mind is free. And we've all been experiencing this. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting in this room. So we practice, we learn to relax, and especially when it feels edgy, being gentle around the edges, right? Learning to stay with the discomfort of that energy. With time, we gather momentum, and that's the constancy. And so patience really helps support the steadiness of mindfulness. The constancy. Rather than the place of reactivity. There's a beautiful witnessing that is happening, and I think that we can witness it in our own sense of being willing to open to what is, and then we can witness and observe the effect. And we can also observe it as an inspiration. Aung San Suu Kyi, you know who she is? The leader of the democracy movement in Burma. She's a great source of inspiration to me. I mean, probably to many people that know what she's been through, right? She's the embodiment kind of grace. And when thinking of patience, she's kind of a model of infinite patience. And so, as you know, she had been under house arrest for many years. And a few months ago, she was interviewed by a Swiss journalist on her last visit to Europe when she got finally handed the Nobel Prize, which she won a long time ago. And she was asked by this journalist how difficult it had been for her. And she smiled with a lot of grace and said that it had not been difficult at all. Because she had been able to learn and grow. And she named, of course, a few qualities such as kindness, compassion, wisdom. But she also said, in her smiling way and elegance, that during many days, the quality of patience had been her closest friend. And that it was an invaluable quality to have as a close friend. But really, it's so important to not only to worship it, but not neglect this quality, which is leaning towards more freedom, helping the way, the path, our own path towards liberation. Here are some words she says. There is darkness in the world, but it is merely an absence of light. All the darkness in the world cannot dispel even the smallest candle flame. We need only to accustom ourselves to the dim vision, and then the blessing of light will grow. So it's taking in that there are challenges, there are difficulties, but there is also the blessing of the light that can grow. And staying present with a positive attitude, having the trust and confidence that I was speaking about at the beginning of the talk, is giving aspiration to lean towards creating an environment for ourselves which is supportive, rather than fall into the trap of reactivity, nourishing more reactivity, and going downhill. When Suzuki Roshi talked about patience to his students, he would talk about constancy. He says, don't worry about the notion of progress. It's more important to just be constant. So this brings up to my mind the potential, the possibility of holding the wider view, kind of the larger perspective. And remind ourselves that self-transformation takes a certain amount of time. So we're patient. Not only in the face of difficulties, but also in relationship to the practice as a whole. The entire process of liberation. And the Dalai Lama suggests this, to look at one's progress over a period of 10, 15, 20 years. He says, this is the time, after a long time of practice, to make an assessment. Has there been change in my own being? Not after just 1 year or two. It's such a short amount of time in relationship to growth and transformation within ourselves. Meanwhile, we're just being continuous, interested in walking the path rather than being done with it. And I can assure you that this is a huge help. It's been so helpful in my own practice, and I've had so many moments where there was impatience and resistance and wanting to be finished with it. But it's such an important point just to notice, oh, there's expectation in the mind. There's wanting to be finished, and that's the end of it. It's just a thought. The process of opening is happening. And it's happening, even if we forget at times that it's happening, even if we feel aversive, even if we feel that we're going backwards, it's happening. And that's the larger perspective, the broader view. So we need not have this narrow view, vision, which is often short-sighted in terms of what should be here and what shouldn't be here. all these ways that we have. Zuki Roshi also was asked by a student if awakening was sudden or gradual. And his answer stays with me so many times when, especially on retreat. He says, after you have practiced for a while, you realize that it is not possible to make rapid, extraordinary progress. So we're patient. We allow. And we're really bringing the sense of peace and ease. And it takes time. It's just like learning anything else, playing an instrument, studying a foreign language, if you have done that, it takes time. So why would this practice not take the time? I really wonder why. Because we don't have a measure, right? With an instrument, often we know, okay? We have a sense of measure. But here, we are our own instrument. And therefore, it's a little harder to know exactly what is happening. And so, by really allowing ourselves to meet ourselves in this way, there's a letting go that happens of how it should be or what it should look like. And this is walking a path of letting be and letting go. And as we understand the entire process of purification of the mind and heart, we can see that underneath we're also cultivating a purification of the motivation itself. Purifying our sense of motivation, that we're not trying to get rid of anything, not trying to get anything either. This is the purification. It's about getting to the intention to understand, to really meet what is in every moment. Understand rather than attach or reject. And so we actualize this potential from that place of deep intention, which is pure as it can be. But at least there's this capacity to understand that every time we have this purity of intention, we also understand that we're part of a world, and that that purification of the process is not a struggle. So simplifying. So I'd like to end the talk with a quote from Saint Francis de Sales. He says, be patient with everyone, but above all with yourself. I mean, do not be disheartened by your imperfections, but always rise up with fresh courage. I am glad you make a fresh beginning daily. There is no better means of attainment to the spiritual life than by continually beginning again and never thinking that we have done enough. How are we to be patient in dealing with our neighbor's faults if we are impatient in dealing with our own? He who is fretted by his own failings will not correct them. All profitable correction comes from a calm and peaceful mind. And so this is what we are cultivating here. So may we have the wholesome intention and the aspiration to learn and cultivate patience. Really have patience be our friend on this path to awakening. Let's sit for just a minute, just to reconnect with the body awareness and the silence that's been established within, patiently being with ourselves, resting in the ease of this moment.